criminals born? Or are they formed?
Psychopaths are convinced that there's nothing wrong with them, so these men are virtually impossible to study. Yet you have found a way in near-perfect laboratory conditions.
Hello, ladies.
That's what makes this so exciting and potentially so far-reaching.
I can't let these guys rub off on me. The way they view sex.
And women.
It is not our job to commiserate with these people. It is our job to electrocute them.
We can't like everything we do. We're talking to serial killers.
Serial killers.
New terminology.
I'm trying to warn you. You're at it.
All right, too much. I'm already in. I'm in.
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord cutting revolution so you, my friends, can be a serial cord killer watching the shows you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood. More importantly, what was that we just watched at the opening there, Bryce?
That was the trailer for Mindhunter. It's a new period piece coming from Netflix in October about the original study of psychopaths.
Is it based on a true story or inspired by a true story?
It's based off of a novel. I know we reported on it when it was announced in January, I believe.
Okay.
So it's based on a novel. I don't have all the exact information.
It's based on the fact that serial killers are a thing.
They exist.
Yeah. Did they hate serial. The podcast.
Hey, joining us again today, we have Andy Beach, author of Video Compression Handbook, back on the show. Good to have you, Andy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Heck yeah, man. Dude, good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you guys. I'm super into that Mindhunter trailer. I saw it, I think, over the weekend, my wife and I, and it's like, I can't wait for it to come out. I'm pretty jazzed about it.
So you have to subscribe to a service called Netflix to get that? Do I have that right?
I've heard of it.
I'm not sure if that's on my cable, so... I'll have to look into how to get that. Actually, that's why we do this show, so that I don't have to make statements like that, because I actually know what's coming down the pike. And we're going to talk about not only Netflix, but the battle with Disney. Forget Netflix, HBO. That's old news. That battle's over, Brian. It's Netflix v. Disney now.
What?
Yeah, primary target.
I thought they were on the same side. What a twist.
At two Disney. So Disney announced it is buying a majority stake in BAM Tech. You may have heard us talk about this before. They used to be called Major League Baseball Advanced Media. They're a streaming video company founded by Major League Baseball. They power services like MLB, but also other sports other sports leagues like NHL. NHL, as if I didn't know it was the National Hockey League. They do HBO Now's back end. Disney also announced, because they're now a majority investor in this technology, they plan to launch an ESPN-branded streaming service in early 2018. This will be with broadcasts not aired on the ESPN cable channels, so it's not like they're replacing ESPN as you know it. It's a supplementary service, at least to start. But the big one regarding Netflix is that Disney and Pixar, Disney-owned Pixar, are going to combine for a streaming service in 2019, and Disney says it will not renew its agreement for Netflix, for Disney or Pixar movies and TV shows on the Netflix service at the end of 2018, although Netflix still in negotiations over Marvel and Lucasfilm content. So Disney may be putting off Marvel and Lucasfilm as a streaming service for a while and letting Netflix continue to use those. But it's a big deal because Disney is getting the top back end streamer, which I know Andy knows a lot how that kind of stuff works, and they're starting to pull some things away from Netflix to keep them for themselves.
Yeah, so am I remembering right? Like, there was a bit of a surprising twist when this announcement came out. You would think that both of these entities operating in their own interest, making big advances, Disney announcing their own streaming service, you would think that that would be rewarded on Wall Street. Turns out not so much. Both of their stocks totally tanked. And I don't know how much of that was people just in general being uncomfortable with change in general, do you think?
I know the Netflix stock took a hit because people started to think, oh, well, Disney's going to crush them now, which is classic short-term thinking. I mean, Disney should... If Disney's stock took a hit, it was likely not because of this particular thing. Because Disney acquiring BAM Tech... I mean, Andy, that's, they're acquiring the premier video streaming company, no?
Yeah, these guys are, I mean, they're pretty well seated in the area to be like the gold standard for this stuff now. So the way BAMTech came around, you know, they have hired away from various places like Apple and Cisco and others, some folks that are sort of core to how we do video today. In fact, one of the guys over there is one of the ones that originally wrote some of the streaming standards for HLS when it was developed. So they fundamentally know how to pump video through like big pipelines and big workflows. And then they acquired a company called Vertigo a couple of years ago that does all of the, there was an application development. So they're well seated to go out and deploy apps on like practically any platform or device that's around. And they know how to sort of from a back end, just take large scale content and convert it. And so it'll be interesting to watch it play out. I think both are short in terms of the stock drops. I think both are short-sighted, and I think it's that fear about the Netflix library suddenly losing Disney. But the reality is they're both going to be big media providers. They're going to find a way to work together after the sort of initial deals for it happen. And I'll be curious to see what actually launches when they get it out there in 2019.
Yeah, the Disney earnings were at the same time that they announced this, so there could be all kinds of reasons why Disney fluctuates there. Now, one of the narratives here is Disney's pulling their movies from Netflix, which isn't exactly what's going on. It's not like they told Netflix they could have them and now they're coming over and changing their mind. It's the deal ended at the end of 2018, and they said, you know what? Just like Starz and Epix did with you before, we're going to keep stuff for ourselves, which I think is going to be something Netflix is not surprised about. That's why they started doing original content, is because they knew this was going to continue to happen. The fact that they might get an extension on Lucasfilm and Marvel stuff is good for Netflix, but it also probably won't last forever. Eventually, Disney's going to want to pull that stuff together itself, and we're going to start seeing content companies creating more and more of their own streaming services. We've talked about that a lot on the show. Now, interestingly enough, Netflix, which has been saying, hey, we're a place full of Netflix originals, is not slowing down on that. Just in the last week, they announced a project called The Kominsky Method, starring Michael Douglas coming back to TV for the first time since the 70s, and Alan Arkin. It'll be written and produced by Big Bang Theory co-creator Chuck Lorre. His series Disjointed, starring Kathy Bates, already is going to premiere on Netflix August 25th. The Coen brothers are going to produce, write, and direct their first TV show. They've executive produced things like Fargo, but they're going to be writing and producing and directing The Ballad of Buster Scruggs for Netflix. It'll be a Western anthology with six stories centered around that main character, Scruggs. Cast includes Tim Blake Nelson as Buster Scruggs, as well as Ryan Daly, James Franco, who's in everything, and Zoe Kazan. David Letterman has agreed to host six episodes of a talk show for Netflix to arrive in 2018, hour long, with long form interviews, one guest per show, and a bunch of stuff shot outside the studio. And then Shonda Rhimes today, speaking of Netflix versus Disney, announced that her production company Shondaland signed a multi-year deal to produce new content for Netflix. Rhimes told Wall Street Journal, "I'm thrilled by the idea of a world where I'm not caught in the necessary grind of network television." Brian, pulling out the big names from old big names like David Letterman right up to hot new creators like Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah, and not only that, doing so in a very savvy method where it's like if Netflix told me that they're bringing back David Letterman in a nightly kind of night show format, it really would have felt like a hollow echo of what he was doing before. But the idea of David Letterman doing a Charlie Rose, doing some kind of inside the actor's studio level of hour-long deep dives with people, I'd pay to see that. But what I mean is, I'll enjoy it for free because I already am subscribed to Netflix.
You won't have to pay any more than you're already paying.
Correct. Exactly. I've already paid for that. Now give it to me.
So what do you guys think of this? Again, people are casting it as Disney versus Netflix. It seems like Netflix has gone from trying to be HBO before HBO is them to trying to become Disney before Disney becomes them.
Okay, so in many ways, what we're seeing is an echo of what we already saw when Starz pulled their content from Netflix. I don't know if you remember this, but one of the few times that both of us covered CES back in the day, we went to the Showstoppers, and Starz had a booth, And we're like, oh my God, I love all your content. I watch it on Netflix all the time. And there was this kind of cringy, like, ooh, yeah, about that. That's not a good deal for us. We want out. And we're like, what? But you're getting all these people. And they're like, yeah, but we're making no money. And so, you know, Starz left. And so Netflix grew. And they started to invest hundreds of millions of dollars into bringing us all kinds of outrageous content that we've fallen in love with since then. We're seeing the same thing. We're seeing the same thing. Granted, it's with a much bigger player, but there's nothing about Netflix's track record that leads me to believe that what they provide won't be just as good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is one of those things where it's like the change is great. Like, this is not to say that, you know, they get complacent with having the Disney stuff, but with the Disney, when they know the Disney things are ending, it sort of becomes incumbent on them to find even more compelling content to put in there. And I mean, the lineup you just put out there is amazing. Like, I'll be tuning into all of that. So
yeah,
it'll be fun to watch kind it play of out.
Build on what Brian and Andy are saying. Netflix doesn't care about a Disney deal, except that in the short term, it helps beef up stuff. It might bring in some people to watch Moana. But their long-term strategy has not relied on third-party content for a long time. If you think back, Netflix is very good at anticipating the next threat far in advance. They are not short-term thinkers. DVDs were going to die, and Netflix started instant streaming at a time when people said, streaming video, there's not enough bandwidth, nobody's going to do it. And it saved them because, you know, we're going to hear later on the show, Amazon closed their DVD distribution. But everyone thinks of Netflix as a streaming thing. Content makers were pulling back catalog, and everybody said, this is going to be it for Netflix. All the content makers are backing out. Netflix had already been developing originals. They already had started their plans to expand internationally so that they weren't reliant just on domestic subscribers. Now, content companies like Disney starting to realize, hey, we can monetize this stuff. And our advantage over Netflix is we have other businesses. We have theme parks. We have movie studios. We have merchandise. And granted, Netflix can be a movie studio too, but they don't have theme parks. They don't have merchandise. Well, here we go. Netflix acquiring Miller World recently, a merchandise and comic book company. Expect more of those kind of acquisitions as Netflix prepares for this next threat. I guess the question I'd want to finish on here is Netflix far enough in advance this time? If Disney's going to be launching this 2018 for ESPN, 2019 for the Disney Pixar service?
Well, it depends. Is the question, is Netflix early enough to be a viable player? Absolutely. But if you're talking about overtaking number one, it's very, very rare that an upstart brand overtakes number one. And usually...
Well, it's more about, is Netflix going to stay number one in their niche if the Disneys and the Universals of the world start gunning for them?
Yes. We've talked about this on the show, but in general, first mover has a huge advantage. Take cable television. In the 1970s, when they deregulated cable, the folks who moved first are the ones who established all the dominance, TBS, HBO, ESPN, and so on. When the old players eventually got around to investing because they saw there was a market there, you got CNBC, a network that floundered until finally it decided to recategorize itself as a business news network and find an unoccupied niche. So I'm going to say that, to be honest, I think Netflix is playing everything exactly right.
Yeah, I think they're in a great position, and I think Disney's still going to be seen as even more niche than Netflix is. Like when you think of Disney, you think of very specific properties and titles. Netflix is a variety where you get a lot of different people interested in a huge variety of things. So I think it's going to stay dominant for a good long time.
Everyone keeps saying, oh, somebody's going to buy Netflix. Keeps worrying that wait, big companies, what's that?
Well, I was about to say, like, what about Netflix's moves makes it look like they intend to do anything other than become the dominant owner of your eyeballs forever? Yeah, yeah.
Netflix is not. And in fact, I read a column today where someone pointed out that Netflix very arrogantly and stupidly has resisted being acquired. People said the same thing about Facebook back in the day.
Yes. I
didn't realize this would get you so upset. Well, that's great.
Like the idea is so dumb on its face. I can't believe anyone would think or say that. Shame on everyone.
Well, when Netflix started doing House of Cards, I feel like I wasn't clear enough that I thought at the time, like, oh yeah, this is the saving move for them. don't worry about them. This is brilliant. This is the thing that is that they needed to do, and they're doing it early enough that it's going to work. I want to put it out there right now. Miller World is that is the House of Cards moment. Expect Netflix to acquire more publishing companies, more merchandise companies. I wouldn't think they're going to open their own theme park, but expect them to partner with people on Stranger Things theme park attractions.
Dude, that's not even a joke. Like I could totally see. I keep in mind that, like, for example, Harry Potter is a third-party property that legend has it in the theme park world that they brought J.K. Rowling over to America, and then Disney gave a big presentation with all these ideas of what they were going to do with the Harry Potter franchise, and Universal made a very counterintuitive move and instead just set her down and said, what do you want it to be like? And whatever she said, they were like, we can do that. So likewise, I mean, understand, Universal would buy, if they build out all this Netflix stuff, Universal would buy it in a heartbeat.
I don't think I want to go on the House of Cards ride, though.
Oh, my God, right. Yes. Yeah, are you kidding me? You walk in and it's in a bathroom.
The haunted House of Cards?
Somebody's in the middle of brushing his teeth and he turns and acknowledges you. He's like, oh, hello there.
No, it's the House of Cards Hall of President.
Yeah.
Underwood.
I'm assuming at the end you're just shoved in front of a subway train.
Oh, jeez.
But no, I'm not even joking about that. You are going to see a lot more of these kinds of Miller World acquisitions, and I highly expect Netflix to be partnering up with somebody on theme park attractions and all the things that the media companies have been doing, and probably some things that they haven't figured out how to do yet. And don't forget, their international presence is going to carry them through any kind of slowing of domestic subscriber growth for a while. So I really think that Disney is doing a very smart move for Disney. Netflix is well positioned to ride this out. And if anything, you might see Netflix and Disney continuing to cooperate on things like the Marvel TV series that they've been doing, which I'm sure they're going to continue to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been successful for both parties, and both parties have invested heavily in it to begin with. I would say, if I was going to make any prediction, I would say 5 years from now, get ready for your definition of what Netflix is to be very, very different 5 years from now. To put it in perspective, 5 years ago was pre-Quickster Netflix split up. It was pre-House of Cards. A lot can change in 5 years. And I'm going to say that Netflix, in general, seems to be winning more often than not. And I believe they'll continue to do so. So the idea of a Netflix theme park land, not that weird.
Even if you have to stretch it a little more than 5 years, the point is still well taken.
Yep.
Hey, thanks everybody for supporting us on Patreon. It's the only reason we're able to continue to do this show and keep you guys up to date on what's happening with all of the companies that are making the stuff that you want to watch and how you can get access to it. Patreon.com/cordkillers is the place to go if you have not supported us yet.
Yeah, man. 100,705. Look, you guys are the most beautiful people on the planet. You guys have taken what was a side hobby and made it our main time gig, and we cannot thank you enough. Hopefully you guys are not even noticing the $4 to $5 a month that a dollar an episode takes out of your bank account. But in the meantime, know that you are changing our lives
and allowing us to tell you how to watch. New way to watch things is Facebook. I mean, you could already watch things on Facebook, but Facebook's rolling out a new version of its video section, renamed Watch. Select users in the U.S. are getting it. It's going to roll out to eventually everybody. Some videos are episodic and broken down into categories like most talked about or what's making people laugh. Users can subscribe to updates from their favorite shows to get all the new episodes as they arrive. They can chat with other viewers while watching, connect with creators through groups, as you might expect. And Facebook has funded some of the shows, although they're really downplaying that, saying, yeah, we gave a few a beat up, but everybody will be able to sell ads through. We'll sell ads for people. In fact, we'll give you 55% of the revenue we generate from your shows. Original content coming at launch from places like Tastemade, Major League Baseball, Micro, Billboard Magazine, Nat Geo, and more.
So how much of your time do you spend consuming Facebook, Andy?
Well, I'm on Facebook a bunch. How much do I use Facebook video?
I just mean Facebook in general, because I have like this unfair, inappropriate, random, disproportionate dislike for Facebook.
I have a 6-year-old and a wife. I see lots of commentary and feedback and things, so I'm constantly hopping on and off of it, but I never spend more than about 30 seconds at a pop on it, and then I'm back off. So I probably use it 50 times a day for 20 seconds each.
That is amazing, and I'm sure that all Facebook just heard was 50 opportunities to get you to stick around longer. All right, we can work with this.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, that we can exactly. Get you to watch some video.
No, this is interesting because I say always that I don't use Facebook, but more and more I find myself doing a little bit of what Andy's talking about. Like, oh, well, I'm going to message my wife's cousin and thank him for inviting us out to his daughter's debut on the weekend and tell him he did a great job. I'll go into Facebook because I don't know his email address. I want to see a picture of my dog at doggy daycare. I'll go to Facebook because they have a group there and they don't post the pictures on the webpage. I mean, things are just located there. And so you end up going into it more and more often. And like you say, Brian, this is a chance to say, hey, wouldn't you like to watch this new cool thing from National Geographic? Would you like to watch this live baseball game from Major League Baseball? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's going to be there.
What do you think is going to have to change for Facebook to be synonymous with at least the mental picture of watching stuff on there? Because it's not a lack of spending money. It's not a lack of them spending goodwill and capital towards it. I mean, they certainly have been trying for, 5 years now? But there's something about it that all I think of when I think of Facebook and video is I think of silent autoplay videos that I wish weren't in front of my face. Like have they harmed their own brand in that regard, do you think? Is there a way to get around it? Should they open up a new service and maybe divorce it in name only from Facebook?
If I were Facebook, I would say that's what we're doing here is answering that by funding professionals to make really good video and changing the name of that section. They've played around a lot with making separate services and they don't usually work. So I think they're shy of doing that. But what they really want to do is say, hey, Facebook Watch is like really good video. We're not just talking. I mean, we'll still have all the shared videos that you guys always share with each other on Facebook. That's still there. But we're making high quality video now. And this is their opportunity to change your mind.
I just hope it doesn't turn into YouTube Red. Because that is a thing that I subscribe to it, but I'll be honest, I don't subscribe to it for the content. I do it so that I can play audio in the background and not have ads. And that's not going to make this a success, and it hasn't made YouTube a success, and it's not going to work for Facebook either. So, you know,
well, honestly, I think the same problem with YouTube Red is the same problem Facebook has, is you got to have a hit. You got to have the thing that everybody's talking about and saying, you got to watch this. And they haven't had that yet. I think they could have that if they were to give a lot of money to a producer who makes videos for the web in the Los Angeles area, such that she could get like double her salary.
if only we knew who you were talking about. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Name one million subscriber channel she helped launch.
I mean, I'm not talking about Eileen Rivera particularly here. Just saying in general, there are a lot of people like her who may have helped launch 1 million subscriber channels for Brian Brushwood in the early days. Just saying. On the other side of launching new things, NBC is shutting down its CISO comedy streaming service later this year. The service launched in January 2016, but it laid off staff in June. We've talked about that on the show. CISO Originals, Harmon Quest, My Brother and Me, Hidden America with Jonah Ray, and The Cyanide and Happiness Show will move to the Verve streaming service, which Bryce has been looking at. He's going to tell you about that a little later in the show.
Yep.
But for this particular story, I think this is a good move. I think this is NBC saying, okay, we did our toe in the water test. Let's back out of that and start making some real honest to goodness, full on NBC branded services.
Yeah. That was one of the frustrating and I guess wonderful things about the CISO experiment is from the very beginning, you could tell it was a limited toe in the water. You could tell that there were budgetary limitations. You could tell, they certainly made a lot of noise and they got a lot of people to mention the service, but something about it from a branding perspective felt like it was, I don't want to say tepid, but just underpowered. Would that be fair to say, Andy?
Oh, totally. I feel like the fact that they just didn't call it NBC comedy meant they were trying to protect their primary brand right from the beginning. And CISO was such a made up name that it was, I was always super concerned, and it just never seemed to catch on with anybody. I mean, you know, even a year in, it seemed like nobody had a clue this thing existed. So,
well, and even the, you know, some of the most premium brands that they had, like, for example, nobody's more qualified to want to sign up for Harmon Quest than me, somebody who watched the origins of that show on Harmontown and so on. And yet I'm so stricken with a la carte fatigue that the idea, it never occurred to me for one second to sign up with CISO. But Bryce, you swam in those waters. Are you sad to see it go?
I'm bummed because CISO, for as weird as CISO was as a service, CISO made some good shows. I've talked a lot about loving the My Brother and Me show. Mm-hmm. Harmon Quest is pretty good. I've been watching, I'll talk about this later when we talk about Verve, but Finding America, the Jonah Ray show that I had no idea existed on CISO, but it was really good. There's stand-ups. There was a bunch of really good stuff that they made, a bunch of original stuff that you would think that they'd continue to choose to own. But either NBC is deciding to not play this game anymore because they didn't have a big viral hit out of the, you know, soon enough, or I don't know what, but it's just not good at promoting their stuff.
Did you, even as a fan of the service, even sure. as a subscriber, even as somebody who, of everyone here on the panel, who enjoyed the most out of CISO, mm-hmm. did you feel a detachment, a lack of commitment that we're trying to describe, or is that only from the outside?
I mean, kind of. It's like it wasn't like Netflix where I go all the time, or YouTube where I go all the time, and there's always stuff there. And so the few shows that they were doing were good. They're well made, but it was, I don't know, it's a weird draw. They couldn't get me to watch the stuff I was paying for.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I went and signed up two different times, I have two accounts on CISO for some reason. It's a promotional thing, and that's some of the confidence and that y'all are talking about, just in not pushing it to the right people or to a more general audience.
Sure, sure. Well, I guess this is an unfair for me to even wish this way, but mm-hmm. I can't imagine a sideways universe where, let's say, Louis C.K. was an original partner of CISO, and so they said, hey, you're really good at writing passionate emails that tell the truth about how you feel about certain things. What if Louis C.K. was a paid or had a stake in this or whatever, mm-hmm. to where, like, I feel like there's something they could have done in another universe that would have made CISO do better.
Maybe. They certainly put... I can commend them for putting money into content and not a flashy advertising budget, because they ended up making good shows. But, you know, if this is the result, then clearly that doesn't work. So
yeah. I don't think they ever intended CISO to last.
Yeah.
Well, but then again, Hulu was not meant to last. Hulu.
No,
Hulu,
in an entirely different way. Hulu was not intended not to last. I will say CISO was intended not to last.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is one of the problems companies have had launching services is not having the rights to all the stuff that would make the service worthwhile. Because remember, NBC doesn't need to keep rights to everything in its catalog, so it sells them off to Netflix, sells them off to Hulu, sells them off to local channels, sells them off to movie channels, the Universal movie stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they may sit down to plan a streaming service and they realize, okay, our engineers need some time to figure out how to make this stuff work. We want to do beta tests. We want to find out how stuff works. We won't get the good stuff until we start letting some of these deals expire and changing the terms of some others. How about a compromise move where we do a non-NBC branded service for a year or two, see how it goes, partner with somebody good like, I don't know, Dan Harmon. If it goes the way we think, we wind it up in a couple of years, we give all the content back to the creators so they can go launch their own independent services, and then we've learned enough internally to be able to launch a solid NBC service that will have our hit comedies and our hit movies and all of that.
Can I confess, and it's fine if you want to disagree with me on this point, the only thing about that scenario that I don't believe is that NBC could be that forward thinking and that they could, does that make sense? Like that seems like the least likely part of the whole thing.
You know what? We've been talking a lot about CBS All Access, right? Which is about to launch with two shows.
Sure.
And, you know, the CBS back catalog, where if we look at at CISO in, let's say in a few years, the NBC Go app launches and we can say, hey, some of the CISO stuff is going to be on here, and it's good stuff. It's Parks and Rec and The Office and Saturday Night Live and all of this stuff that we know that they can make passable apps that work on platforms. We know that they can probably handle server load, but they will also be making a more general range of content outside of comedy. I think that there's some merit to what Merritt is saying.
Besides just the name. I mean, and think about CBS. CBS has been planning for this since 2008. When CBS bought CNET Networks in 2008, one of the things they told us was, our plan is to only sell our content to people who will authenticate it and not sell it exclusively. And that's exactly what they've done. That's why they were able to launch CBS All Access with their entire back catalog, because 9 years before, more like 6 years before they launched it, they started planning to keep those agreements so they would always have access to their best stuff. We got all of these ways to watch stuff. What are we watching? Let's check it out in Under Surveillance.
It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Netflix renewed Glow for a second season. No word on when that second season will arrive, but a little later than some other of their hit shows. Maybe they didn't expect this one to be as big of it as it was.
Did how did that series end? I only watched the first few episodes.
Spoilers, jeez.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the ending.
Did the girls actually glow by the end? Were they luminescent?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was full on glowing. I thought it was great. I watched the whole thing when it came out, and then immediately turned around and watched the documentary they had with it. So
the documentary was kind of crazy, man. It was like it was as though when you listen to select parts of the documentary, I remember thinking like, what are the odds that they just handed this documentary and said, yeah, that's the show. It's so on the nose on some of the stories.
The Crown returns to Netflix December 8th. It will be the last season with Claire Foy playing Queen Elizabeth II. They plan to jump ahead in time, and so they need an older person to play the older version of the Queen. Michael C. Hall and Jodie Balfour will be in this season playing John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy.
I know you are in love with this, right, Tom?
Great series. And obviously the content is liable to make me like it, but I am told by people who aren't predisposed to like stuff about the English monarchy that it is really good too.
Is this a prequel or a sequel to The King's Speech?
It is a sequel, actually, to The King's Speech.
All right.
Almost directly.
Right on.
Yeah. Sony announced that Silver and Black, a Spider-Man cinematic universe film, will be coming out on February 8th, 2019. If you didn't catch it, Venom is arriving October 5th, 2018.
So this is part of the proposed, there was chatter we were hearing, especially with, the curious deal with Spider-Man kind of being in the Marvel cinematic universe and so on. There was talk about Sony. It's like, well, we have Spider-Man, and that means we can have all of the. We can create a supervillain backstory thing. Is that part of this?
That's what it seems like. Oh, although Silver and Black won't be about villains; it'll be about heroes.
Well, no. Black Cat was always in that middle ground.
On the fence.
She was fairly villain-like. Yeah.
Yeah. And then comedians Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson are bringing their hit podcast Two Dope Queens to HBO as 4 1-hour comedy specials in 2018. A growing trend of HBO finding good quality podcasts and turning them into HBO specials.
Just in general, let me make it very clear to anyone from HBO listening that I am in favor of HBO taking podcasts and making them into awesome HBO shows.
Yeah, well-funded, awesome HBO shows. It's a good idea. Hey, let's talk about what we've actually been watching. Starting with you, Andy. What's been filling up your eyeballs?
Well, I'm on Rick and Morty big time since it's come back and loving it. I just finished Ozark. What else have I been watching? On Hulu, they had a one-season show called Pure that was described to me as Breaking Bad in the Mennonites. So I gave that a try, and it ended a little flat, I think, but I enjoyed it while it was around. And then this weekend I saw Detroit at the theater. Oh. I thought it was amazing.
Okay, so going in reverse order. First of all, I've heard nothing but universal astonishing praise for Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It's not a comedy. You're not going to walk in there and like, I was very tense the whole time. Like it has lots of high tension and you're very uncomfortable. And then I was kind of exhausted when I walked out, but in a good way.
And going backwards, Ozark. Yeah.
Ozark.
Yes, so I know. I need to watch Ozark. Okay.
Oh my God. Tom, you don't even know. You don't even know how bad you got to watch Ozark.
We need anything a special else? Library watch where we don't watch it with Tom. We just all watch Tom watch it for the first time.
He FaceTimes us and we just
FaceTime
watch him.
Nice. Brian, what have you been watching?
All Usual Suspects, Preacher, Firefly, Rick and Morty, Game of Thrones. And I finally admitted to myself, like I was telling myself I was a guy when he was bored who would watch Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. But now I think I'm just a Last Week Tonight John Oliver watcher, which is different.
The guy who watches Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
There's a new Plinkett review. Mr. Plinkett reviews Ghostbusters, and he is unkind to say the least.
Not shocked.
It's amazing. And he's unkind. Like personally, I am shocked to see anyone go after something as culturally radioactive as, you know, the very act of not liking Ghostbusters. In some way means you did or did not vote for, you know, this politician or whatever, to take that territory on and instead only fight your battle on the comedy chops of it. He, by the way, spoiler alert, he puts everything at the feet of Paul Feig. Mm-hmm. He is harsh and complete in his indictment. As he put it, the crass, that's not the right word. Basically, the gross number of commercial tie-ins that Sony Pictures is guilty of, and he does a great job of sketching out, you know, what a disaster it is for the movie.
That's why I like Mikey Newman.
Yeah,
just makes me feel better about the world.
I don't know.
I have been watching all the same things that you've been watching, in addition to, I have been watching Twin Peaks, of course, to do the Damn Fine podcast with Ron Richards. Been rewatching a bunch of Game of Thrones. That's what I've been doing with a lot of my free time that I should be watching Ozark with. Is just my wife and I are just having a blast going back and rewatching all the old episodes of Game of Thrones. And we went to see Dunkirk, which again, as a fan of British history, I was predisposed to like it, but it is amazing. It blew my mind in a way that I didn't think it was going to. On my scale, it's amazing, not mind blowing, but the way Christopher Nolan tells the story is not what I was expecting. And when I saw how he was constructing it, I thought, oh, okay, so he's going to show us more personal views of this historical event, and we're not going to get the big propaganda Churchill part of this. Which, if you don't know the history of it, the British called upon all these small fishing boats to help the Navy evacuate 400,000 soldiers off the beaches in Dunkirk when they should rightly have been massacred by the Germans and captured. And it was called the Miracle at Dunkirk. And Churchill's famous speech, "We will fight them on the beaches, we will fight them in the fields," was in response to Dunkirk. He not only sticks to his more personal storytelling, but he still includes the victorious feel of Dunkirk and the way Churchill used it as a propaganda move in brilliant, brilliant ways. So I highly recommend seeing this if you just want to, you know, see somebody beat the Nazis without having to see the Nazis.
Right on. Yeah, that is kind of a weird one where it's like it's everybody just scared not getting hit by Nazis, I assume.
Yeah, there's the three storylines are one of the fishing boats, one of the small fishing boats and the fisherman who volunteers to join, an RAF fighter squadron. Yep. That's going in to try to defend the beach, and of course the people on the beach.
Right on. So, hey, Tom, a lot of people don't realize that in addition to Cord Killers, you and I do other things to keep our lives afloat.
Yeah, wait,
except for
tell them
I totally skipped.
Completely
I
missed about
it. To which I say, shut up, and you should listen to What's on the Lookout with Bryce.
Hey, so when the CISO news broke that we talked about earlier in the show, I thought, or I was reminded, oh yeah, I really liked the My Brother and Me show, and now I can watch it on Verve with their ad-free thing. So I signed up for Verve. And I thought, well, you know, this is kind of a new thing. We talked about it when it launched earlier this year, but I really wanted to take their free trial and just kind of see what's going on with it. I generally really liked it. If you don't know what Verve is, it's a it's like a niche content aggregator. So it's got stuff from Crunchyroll, which is the big thing, and it shares a parent company with Crunchyroll. But it also has Rooster Teeth and Nerdist stuff, Mondo, Geek and Sundry, Funimation for dubbed anime. There's a lot of very specific niches here, and it's a spectrum of it. It's stuff that I think in an interview they said people who like one of these things often like these other things, and so we've tied them all together. So you've got things like Tested, which is all about building stuff and technology, and then you've got all this anime, and then you've got a bunch of D&D stuff and pop culture stuff with Nerdist. And so as far as things that I liked, like the navigation on the PlayStation 4 app is really fast and really smooth. It's surprising, because you would think, I don't know, when I think of not big TV apps, I think of something that is slow or delayed. I know that it uses the native PlayStation keyboard, which sounds like a very small thing. But when you've, I believe it used to be Hulu that had their own custom keyboard, and it would do this thing where it would be, you would hit the button and then move the cursor, but then it would hit the next thing that you moved to because it was a delayed on their custom keyboard. So the quality of life is actually pretty good. There's a lot of different things in these different services. There's a ton of the anime. There's Rooster Teeth, which has a ton of their Let's Play stuff and podcast stuff. You've got all sorts of different animation and webtoons with Mondo and Cartoon Hangover. And I think by them buying these CISO shows, they started this new channel on the service called Verve Select, which is where all of the CISO stuff lives now, because there's also a CISO channel, but that'll obviously go away once CISO shuts down. And that seems pretty promising, because I think those are good shows, and those are really smart acquisitions. But there are some definite downsides to Verve that I just noticed. Some of the stuff is really, really poorly organized. Some of it's just messy. The Rooster Teeth channel alone. So Rooster Teeth makes a lot of stuff. They have a lot of series. They have like four different gaming news podcasts and stuff. On Verve, they have two separate series, two discrete series called Let's Play. And that is all that they are delineated with. They have a different graphic, and one of them has info, but it's very generic, and the other one doesn't. And both of those are sort of separate tabs in their thing, and it's set up like a show, like a sequential show. So it starts off with their oldest content, which is some very old Call of Duty game from 2015.
And it's expected that that's where you begin.
That's where you would begin,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
Because it's
all
number
right.
one,
right?
And so stuff like that. They have news tabs on Rooster Teeth, which like make no sense being that way, because it starts off with 2015 and not news, like not the current events. So that stuff is really inconsistent. Some stuff is just inconsistent. Some channels have alphabetical listings of all their series, and some of them need it, right? Because you've got Crunchyroll, which has hundreds or thousands of series at any one time, but then you've got smaller stuff that doesn't. But I know going into this, I didn't know much of I didn't know everything on the service, so I want to know that I have access to everything, and I want to have that stuff featured, which is another thing that some of the channels don't feature stuff very well. Just in terms of like, this is our big show, this is the big thing that we're known for, and here's info. Just across the board, information delivery is just pretty weak. There's also, especially if you are hard of hearing, subtitling and captioning is basically non-existent on this, and that is bad for two different reasons. One, there is content on here now, especially now that these CISO shows have come here, that should have subtitle and caption data. Those shows have it on CISO. They should have
so
it here.
So you can't even blame the fact that it's like, oh, this is from an independent producer who doesn't adhere to these standards qualities. Like, this is something like that data exists.
That exists, and yeah. There's just no system for it. Hmm. And so that's pretty dumb. But then there's also so Verve has Crunchyroll, which is all about subtitled anime, and Funimation, which is all about dubbed anime. But if you've ever watched a dubbed anime, you know that sometimes you need subtitles because people will look at their phones and you have no idea what's written on their phones, but something really important came in on their phone and you don't know what it says. That's a bummer that subtitle stuff isn't there. And especially if you have hard of hearing concerns or you just want a caption system, it's not there for you. Also, some of this stuff is of weird fidelity. A lot of the Geek and Sundry stuff is archives of live streams. It's live streamed D&D or podcasts and stuff. And some of the older stuff is not high res. Some of it is they have Critical Role on Geek and Sundry, which is like one of their big D&D shows. The very first episode, you've got Matthew Mercer DMing the show, and there's I don't know if it's a Twitch alert or a sub alert, but it shows up and it's playing some hip hop music over him introducing the show. And it's like, oh, some of this stuff is just kind of shaky because it's from a wide gamut of sources.
Well, and I can understand for the independent producer who believes when they're creating something that the most it'll do is go out this week and be seen. Like you don't know that you are going to have this historical meeting or this is going to.
Sure.
You never know when you begin the episode that this is it. This is the funniest episode you will ever have. And you will wish that you had isolated sound of all the things, but you're just unprepared for it.
But and so going back to Critical Play, you go to the newer stuff and it looks better. It's still very clearly something that they live streamed, but it does sound better and it looks better. But, you know, if it's a sequential series, you have to get through all that stuff. Now, that said, there is still a lot of really good D&D content on there. There's a Will Wheaton GM'd series called Titan Break, something like that, that is really well produced and it's heavily edited. And they've got all sorts of illustration and music and stuff. There's a wide variety of things on Verve. And overall, I really did enjoy spending time with it. I'll probably keep it for at least a month and keep seeing what else is in here, because there's just a bunch of stuff that is impossible to see in a week. So if you're interested in Verve, the website is verve.co, VRV.co. They have an ad supported model, so you can make a free account and watch a bunch of stuff, but not everything. You just have to watch some ads. They have a $10 combo pack is what they're calling it, like a fast food combo. So you get a bunch of these channels with ad-free access, and you get to see all the premium stuff in it. That's $10 a month, and there are a couple extra channels you can add on top of this, like Riff Tracks and Machinima at a la carte pricing. So I spent the 7 days using the iOS app, which is pretty good also. I didn't really talk too much about it, but that's pretty good. The desktop app, it's like a browser-based, and the PlayStation 4. There's also a Roku and Android app, but there's no Apple TV app yet. Cross my fingers, because that would be really good, because I like watching the stuff on my Apple TV. So that's what's on the lookout.
Awesome.
Folks, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Thank you, Bryce. Real quick, as Brian was saying, we do other things, and it helps us be able to do this thing as well. So some of you are able to directly support us on Patreon. Some of you may be able to support our other products or both. And one of those that I've been doing is with author Rob Reed. He's got a new book out called After On, which is about a super artificial intelligence coming awake in Silicon Valley in the near future. It is all of the tech topics you've ever read about turned into an exciting fiction story. And we did a podcast that's partway through now, where we interview different people who are experts in those areas about the reality behind the fiction. So if you're wanting to learn about synthetic biology, artificial intelligence, privacy, and the threats to our privacy, it covers the gamut and includes myself, Rob Reed, and some great guests at after-on.com. Let's move on to the front lines.
front lines.
Pandora announced this afternoon that Sling TV founder Roger Lynch is going to be the new Pandora CEO. And at the same time, the former head of Sony Pictures, Michael Linton, is joining the Pandora board. Pandora founder Tim Westergren told The Verge back in March that that video was on Pandora's list. It certainly seems that way with these two hires.
You know, it's not the nuttiest idea I can think of. Pandora, in addition to having a strong position in terms of, you know, music listening up against Spotify, but also Pandora was one of the leaders, and well, I forgot what it's called, like the Music DNA project, where
Music
they tried,
Genome Project. Yeah,
The Music Genome Project. If they could apply that similar thing to video, and basically that's an opening that they could outdo YouTube. YouTube, of course, is, you know, king with their algorithm designed to suck you in and keep you watching. And I'm sure Facebook is doing the same thing. If Pandora had some kind of skills in that place, I think they could surprise everyone.
Imagine Pandora not doing a video, just a video playlist, but we know what you're watching. Here's the next episode.
Yeah. Or on top of that, like we know what you are hungry for after having watched this 20-minute review. I don't know. There might be something to surprise us there. Meanwhile, Robert Kirkman's Skybound has a new deal to create TV projects for Amazon Prime Video. Kirkman, of course, has Walking Dead on AMC. He has Outcast on Cinemax and a film version of Invincible headed to Universal. So we're not sure yet what Kirkman might bring to Amazon. Don't care. Just love me some Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, Amazon building up its own stable over there. Netflix isn't the only one. Variety reports Michael Sheen and David Tennant have been cast in the lead roles of an Amazon BBC co-production. It's a 6-episode series based on the book Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, premiering first on Amazon Prime, then on BBC in the areas where Amazon Prime exists, and BBC gets it everywhere else.
Meanwhile, Amazon is shutting down its DVD by mail service Love Film on October 31st. Subscribers will get a discount on an Amazon Fire TV stick, which I'm going to say pretty good deal. Pretty good deal. Yeah. As long as you have internet.
Yeah. Roku and RCA announced a new lineup of Roku-enabled HD TVs. A 32-inch model costs you $250, 43-inch models $380, and the top-end 50-inch model is $500. All three models available now.
Andy, are you overly fond of TVs that have Rokus built into them or not?
I generally like separate devices so that I can upgrade the devices a lot more often. I mean, I actually just realized my 1080p LCD, like, primary TV is 10 years old officially now. And I've had probably 30 different devices plugged into it in those 10 years. So, nah.
Yeah. Vizio added the Google Play Movies and TV app to its VIA Plus and D-Series smart TVs. It recently added apps like Netflix and Amazon. I got to tell you, man, I've been historically down on televisions with that stuff built in, but I think we're just at a place where we're swimming in so much high speed technology that I'm okay with it being a built in service.
Right? I mean, if the apps can last as long as my TV, I'll be fine with it, and that's possible now.
Yeah. Agreed.
Maybe not as possible with these cheaper versions. I don't know. We'll see. Time to check some dispatches from the front. Ken asks, what do you think will happen with Star Trek Discovery if the first episode is a huge hit on CBS TV, but the subsequent streaming-only episodes bomb? Does it move back to CBS television? Will they let it fail as a streaming-only show? If they move it to television, what will this do for future streaming-only series? Will people buy in to CBS All Access if they think there's a chance that streaming-only shows will eventually show up on CBS television for free?
I wouldn't worry too much about that possibility, about that brand damaging type of thing. To be honest, this is really a win-win. Either it works and thrives on its own, or it gives them an excuse to appear magnanimous and say, oh, the VIP lounge is available to everyone now. We're great. We're CBS.
Yeah, I don't think they take it back to air necessarily, because a lot of people will have already seen it on All Access, and so you're not going to get as good of a ratings bump. But yeah, maybe they add it to their on-demand libraries on cable and PlayStation View and stuff like that. That could be a mitigating thing they do.
Yeah. Joe writes us saying, morning, Tom and Brian. Last show, Mikey Newman made a great point that I wish I would have moved into a discussion. His comment was that following the conversation of how CBS moves his properties around like pawns, Mikey said he didn't feel like it respects the creator of the art, particularly from Brian, who's produced shows and even reneged his cable cutting tacit agreement so that he could watch himself on cable TV and no longer controls the distribution of them. I've heard Brian mention in passing that he doesn't know where the shows are or how to get them. So it sounds like he's just let go. I'd love to hear more about what the end of the deal process is to let go of letting go of your art. Hmm.
I mean, a lot of that stuff is out of our control.
Well, and I think that's the I think that the idea of building your own art is a luxury good that only happens later in your career. Once you're there's three types of talent. There's emerging talent, there's proven talent, and then there's unproven talent, right? So what you want is if you're spending money and investing, you want emerging talent, something that's fairly cheap but that, you know, will work very, very hard for you. And I think you know, Scam School and Hacking the System happened during my emerging talent phase, so it never occurred to me that I should even try to own any of that stuff. It's like, clearly I am establishing my chops and I'm getting out in front of people, so that's fine. Now you know, now in an age where we're starting to do, you know, Modern Rogue, of course, is building a robust back catalog, and at the age of 42, I'm very, very aware of ownership of all that stuff. And I want to hold on to it because it is the kind of thing that if the trajectory for Modern Rogue continues to go as we hope it will, maybe that back catalog suddenly becomes, you know, something that we could sell all at once to the next CISO or something like that.
And for if you're in broadcast TV or network TV, all of that stuff gets heightened way more. You're in less control.
Yeah, not even the director, right. The person who, or the showrunner, as Dan Harmon famously found out, you know, sure. He doesn't own it. You know, if you're lucky if you have a piece of all future revenues derived from it, but at some point, no one person owns any of it. And I think that's part of the deal going into it. And to be honest, it's also part of the thing that has me so excited to work so hard, you know, building a studio, building the infrastructure, building a team of producer editors to, you know, I'm very much hoping that Modern Rogue can be that kind of Adam Savage tested kind of thing 5 years from now.
I'm curious if Andy, if you've got any perspective of this from your end of the industry.
Yeah, no, I don't think I touch into it much. I feel like the closest I come is in the, like the writings I've done, and those tend to be so technical that you're going to publish it and then you kind of put it out there and then it belongs to somebody else. And the best you can hope, like the way I've learned with my writing is I'm basically doing it and giving it away for free. And when someone has a question, they come to me to ask me the question and clarify it. And that's where I have opportunity to work with them in more detail.
Shannon Harris in Brandon, Florida wrote in and said, is there a way to request a company to start streaming some of their back catalog? HBO does not have some major pieces of their library. The Tom Hanks produced From Earth to the Moon miniseries, the Golden Globe winning Don King Only in America movie, the classic David Mamet directed special Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants, and all of the past Young Comedian specials. Is it because these things were filmed and produced for 4x3 screens that they remain mothballed and not available to stream? My guess is no, that's not it. They do have some 4x3 stuff in their back catalog. My guess is they don't own the rights.
Yeah, which is too bad because that Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants is one of the best magic shows I've ever seen. It's way, way good if you can find it. Yeah, I think that's one of those rights things. Like nowadays, you know, hindsight being 2020, I'm sure everybody works out all these decisions before a project even gets started. But you know, everything you mentioned is pre-internet era.
Yeah. And back then, HBO just wanted to be able to show them when they were new and maybe exercise some options to rerun them later. But reruns didn't do as well for them. They needed to keep producing new shows, so they didn't worry about ongoing rights. Once it became clear that On Demand was going to be good, then they locked down The Sopranos. They locked down Sex and the City to make sure that they always have those available in the archives.
Yep.
Well, that's it for this episode of Cord Killers. Thank you, Andy Beach, for joining us. Tell folks about your book, where they can find it, and anything else going on you think they might be interested in.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, I wrote a book called Real World Video Compression, and I am in the midst of updating it with a buddy of mine named Aaron Owen right now, and we are retitling the book Video Compression Handbook. It's going to be coming out April of 2018, but you can follow along in real time if you sign up at video or vchbook.com or follow the Twitter handle Video Handbook. You can also find me at I'm at Andy Beach. And if you just want the book, not interesting pictures of my kids and the food I eat, then you can follow Video Handbook.
Excellent. Folks, our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will cut all your cords again next week.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
With you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.